Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host for the week, Anthony Wood, and with me today is none other than the general himself, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Anthony. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Excited to have football just within touching distance once again. And of course, we're getting closer to the England game, so of course I'm excited. Let's be honest, I've been looking forward to that for years.
I'm excited about it too. I'm not looking for that long ride in coach, but once I get there, get to go back, I'll be fired up about it.
Absolutely. But yeah, so let's focus on last week's performance if we can. Obviously, the Texans lost last weekend, a bit of a disappointing performance overall. But so now that you've had a few days to sort of process the performance and have a think about it, what was your overall verdict on how the Texans performed last weekend?
I've never seen a secondary get depleted in one game like their secondary did. Jacoby Brissett took advantage with four touchdown passes to run his record to 4-0 against the Texans. They're the only team that wish Andrew Luck would come back out of retirement. At least they beat Luck, and they have been unable to beat Jacoby Brissett. They, despite all that, and what I thought, Anthony, the reason they got beat was the penalties. They had 10 penalties, and it seemed like all were crucial. You know, you convert on fourth down, penalty, you have to punt. You stop the Colts on third down, penalty, they get a first down and go on to score a touchdown. It just seemed like they came in crucial situations, and you're doing it against a team, the Colts, who are the most disciplined in the NFL, fewest penalties, fewest yards, and it shows. They don't beat themselves. Neither team had a lot of turnovers. Deshaun Watson had two. One was a bad pass. And this is the thing about that game. They're down 7 points. Bill O'Brien used good strategy to take a safety, but they botched it for some reason. Brian Anger, an 8-year veteran, caught the ball instead of going out of bounds. He used 3 seconds off the clock going sideways. That made no sense. Bill O'Brien let too much time go off the clock, I think 33 seconds, without calling a timeout. Despite all that, if Kiki QT had not dropped a pass that was intercepted at the Colts 32, they would have had a first down with, I think, 37 seconds left and no timeouts, but that would have given them a chance to work out 3 or 4 plays throwing the ball quick. But we'll never know because Kiki QT could not handle that pass, and they deserved to lose. I picked them to win. I usually never pick them to win on the road. Picked them to lose to the Chargers, and they won. Picked them to lose to the Chiefs, and they won. So this time, I thought they'd beat the Colts. Raiders beat the Colts in Indy, and they lose. And a lot of it, as O'Brien said, was self-inflicted.
As you mentioned, obviously the penalties were a real Achilles heel for the Texans again. I mean, is that something that you would put down to poor coaching, or is that just discipline on the players' side?
Coaches tell the players till they're blue in the face about don't jump off sides. You know, don't block somebody when you can see their numbers. When you go in, you got to report that you're in. You know, the new tackle, Skipper, who was signed off New England's practice squad last week, had to play. He goes in, didn't report he was eligible, cost him a first down on a fourth down attempt. I don't blame coaches for that. I blame players.
And do you think, obviously, you mentioned that it was Skipper there that cost them that down in particular, and you mentioned, obviously, the injuries to the secondary that they've gone through recently, and obviously throw in Titus Howard as well and Will Fuller. Do you think these injuries piling up and then these new bodies coming in, has that got a lot to do with the increase in penalties recently, or is it purely from the standpoint that the players need to be more focused?
No, I don't think injuries had anything to do with penalties. Now, Skipper, if he wasn't in there, obviously he wouldn't have been called for that. He'll never make that mistake again. Will Fuller being out, to me, is not any big deal. You got Kenny Stills back. He makes as many big plays as Fuller, 11 catches, 6 of them for 30 or more yards, 2 40-yard catches on their only 2 touchdown drives, and he has good hands. He doesn't drop passes. Plus, the reason Stills is in Houston was because of Fuller's injury history. Fuller goes out, they got a player to replace him. They do. Now when you got Hopkins, Stills, and QT, that's still a pretty good threesome, especially the way the tight ends are playing now, Duke Johnson out of the backfield. Deshaun Watson's still got a lot of weapons, so many more than last season.
And how do you feel about this offense? Obviously, you mentioned the tight ends coming into their own, and the run game has been developing as well quite nicely with Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson. And how do you feel this offense is coming together? Do you think are we yet to see the best out of this offense?
Well, it was pretty good against Atlanta. I don't think we'll ever see it better than that. It was pretty good against the Chargers. And it was good enough to win against Indy. But the fact is, the offense committed too many penalties. Laremy Tunsil had a pre-snap problem in Miami. He's got a pre-snap problem now. And I've had people say he can't hear, get his hearing tested. I checked. They said what it is. A lot of left tackles, they try to get a jump on the best pass rusher that they're going against, and he does a lot. And he usually gets away with it, but he's been called too many times. They've got to reduce those penalties. Penalties were not an issue last year. They were among the least penalized team in the league. You know, it's one thing to get beat by the other team. You don't want to beat yourself with boneheaded penalties and mental mistakes.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Tunsil there, obviously, in the offensive line. It's certainly been better than certainly last year, and it's better than I'd expected at this point in the season, on the whole at least. How do you feel about the performances of the likes of, obviously, Tunsil, Howard before his injury, Max Sharping, and Johnson coming in now as well at tackle?
Well, there's no question, Anthony. Their offensive line is so much better. Tunsil's a big-time player. Before last week, and I haven't looked, but Pro Football Focus had him, I think, over the previous three or four games, best tackle in the league, the highest graded. And Titus Howard was doing really well on the right side. I don't know if we'll see him back late November. It'll be December. Roderick Johnson's done a good job in his place. Now he's got a neck injury, and he may not play. I'd prefer to see Chris Clark over Dan Skipper. Skipper got here last week from New England. Chris Clark has played for O'Brien. He's played for Mike Devlin. He knows the system, and he's an experienced veteran. I would put him in the lineup instead of Skipper. The inside guys, Sharping is good. They love the guy. Nick Martin's having the best season of his career in the first year of his contract extension. And right guard Zach Fulton's playing better than he did last year. You know, they've got, I think, 21 sacks, and probably 10 of them are not their fault. I'm always amazed when I see people around the league blasting their offensive line for 21 sacks. You just can't do that. You should at least make an effort to figure out how many they've been responsible for. I try to keep up with drop passes, because I go back one game in which Warren Moon threw 5 interceptions with the Oilers, and 2 were his fault. 3 bounced off receivers' hands. And to me, it's just so unfair not to make an effort to find out who's responsible. And right now, there's something I'm interested in on the Oakland game that they couldn't run on the Colts. Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator of the Colts, is outstanding. He's going to be a head coach. And he does a great job against the Texans. They stopped the run by forcing everything inside, and the Texans couldn't adjust quick enough. And I'm assuming the Raiders, who are better at run defense than the Colts are, they're going to have a similar approach. Both teams run the ball well. Both teams stop the run even better. So this one's going to come down to Watson and Carr. And it's hard to believe, Anthony. Imagine if this was Deshaun Watson. What would we ever say? If we said Deshaun Watson's only been sacked 8 times in 6 games? Well, that's where Derek Carr is. 8 sacks in 6 games. You'd think with that kind of protection, he'd have better stats.
Absolutely, I completely agree, and that's something that I'm really looking forward to this weekend, is seeing that seeing if the offense can really bounce back off of last week. Like you mentioned, they did play well enough to win last week, but it just wasn't quite there for them. I'm hoping in particular to see some more at QT. I'd love to see more of him this year, because for me, he hasn't quite lived up to the level he did last year. Obviously, he did take a little while to get back into the squad this year, but as of yet, I haven't seen that same spark from him. I mean, from the likes of, say, QT and other second years, so look at Justin Reed, for example, as well. Do you feel they've lived up to that level this year, or is there a slight difference from their play last year to this year?
Well, first of all, they got a lot of weapons at receiver. They didn't have – last year the tight ends had 4 touchdown catches, all by rookie Jordan Thomas. They've had 5 in the first – let's say they played 7, I think 5 in the first 5 games. They still have more touchdowns than any team's tight ends. And then Duke Johnson's averaging 9.8 yards per catch, which I believe is a career high for him. So I want to see more Kenny Stills. I don't care about Geeky QT, because when Stills makes the catches, he makes big plays. QT had the one on a crossing route here in the Atlanta game. That's what he's best at. He's not a threat to go down the sideline. He works the middle of the field. That's what he's got to do. I love slant passes. I like the slant routes in which they catch the ball. It's thrown quick. They catch quick. You cannot have that ball ricochet off your hands on a slant route, or it'll be intercepted. And I like that. But to me, you got to get the ball to Hopkins. The second option is Stills. They're different players. And then Darren Fells and Jordan Akins have just been terrific. And so is Duke Johnson. So I think anybody whose catches are down, it's probably a result of having so many players for Watson to choose from. And one of the things Watson likes, Anthony, is all those guys want the ball, and they're not shy about telling it. And so he knows when he tries to get it to them, they are going to give every single ounce of energy they have to making that play, because it means so much to them. And I know they got to run the ball, but I love it when they pass, because I like watching Watson, whether he's taking off and running or whether he's throwing the ball. I love watching his team throw it.
Especially when they got that more fast-paced offense in there. I love watching it, as throwing a bit of no huddle every now and then. I find that so entertaining. And one of the players you mentioned there that I've been particularly impressed with was Darren Fells. I know, obviously, he's an experienced veteran. We knew roughly what to expect from him coming into this year, and I loved what I'd seen from him in Cleveland beforehand. I think he's been a great fit. I love what he brings to this offense. I think he's a good blocker, and I just love the fact that he is such a reliable target. You know, if you get the ball to him, he will almost certainly catch it and get some yards. I just love watching him play. I mean, do you feel that this tight end group, especially considering they've got Jordan Thomas and Carly Weary waiting in the wings as well, how confident are you in this tight end group moving forward, not just this year, but over the coming 2 or 3 years?
I thought Fells was not going to make the team. He was 33 years old. They had Jordan Thomas coming off a good rookie year. They had Jordan Akins, who I knew had talent and was being moved around. He was more like an H-back. And I knew that Kahale Waring was taken in the third round because they had him rated as a 2. I made a prediction in training camp that midway through the season, Waring would be the starter. Boy, I was wrong, because the other two guys are playing so well. They don't need those other tight ends back. And Fells is 6'7", 270, and I thought at one point, I was thinking, you know what, he's the same size as Aaron Judge. That was when the Yankees were playing the Astros, and I thought, we think he's so big in football, that means Judge, my God. And Fells has good hands, he can move. He's great in the locker room. Why the Browns cut him is beyond me. And I just am astonished. And he's made big plays. He's been, you know, the guy's a former basketball player. He and Akins were both professional players, one in basketball, one in baseball, who came to the game late. But Fells has been a revelation, a terrific signing by former general manager Brian Gain.
Absolutely. And then obviously going back to the secondary, we touched on it earlier on. Obviously they've gone through a lot of players recently. Philip Gaines is now out for quite a while. It's certainly safe to say at this point in time as well. And then throw in the injuries elsewhere to the likes of Roby as well. How concerned are you about this secondary moving forward? And obviously, are we going to see any more of the likes of, say, Xavier Crawford now? And how important do you think the play of Lonnie Johnson is now, especially moving forward?
Lonnie Johnson has been really, really good. He gets better every week. He's mainly because he's the only one healthy. He's covered tight ends. He's covered wide receivers. He doesn't line up in the slot. He lines up outside. And he likes to get in people's faces. And the coaches love that. Bradley Roby was played well before he was hurt. They expect him back after the bye week, which after Oakland, they go to London, play Jacksonville. Then they get the bye week. Then they have their toughest 3-game stretch at Baltimore, Indy, New England. So they're hoping Roby will be back then. Maybe Titus Howard will. I don't know. But those corners are so important. Phillip Gaines, done for the year. Gary Conley, who came from Oakland, it should be insulted that his coach thought so little of him that he would trade him to a team they were about to play.
Absolutely.
John Gruden has only 9 players left who were on the roster when he took over before last season. It's amazing. They got 12 rookies, 5 rookie starters. It's so much fun to watch Gruden and his decisions on the roster. So Conley's gone. Texans traded that 3 they got from Seattle. Conley plays press coverage. He's got good size. He's got time left on his contract. He's 24 years old. People panic because the Texans are not keeping their draft choices. Well, they're trading them for players who are young.
Yes.
Tunsil turned 25 in early August. Conley's 24. They really like Jacob Martin, who's 23, outside linebacker, who came in the Seattle trade. And so not all of them are young. Carlos Hyde's 29, but there's kind of method to their madness. They're not taking guys on these trades for these high picks who are at the end of their career. They're going to be around here a while. And I like the idea that Tunsil and Stills and Conley and those guys are going to be here because they're young. And they hope to get out of Conley what the Rams and the Ravens got out of Jalen Ramsey and Marcus Peters on Sunday. They both got traded there and get a crash course in the defense, learn some of the game plan, and they make big plays and victories.
And how do you feel about Conley in terms of a fit for this defense, and where do you see him lining up in especially over the future coming years when say Jonathan Joseph, obviously coming towards the end of his career now, when he's no longer in that lineup, what do you see that secondary looking as, say, in 2-3 year times?
If he can play, remember, John Gruden got rid of him after a terrible game in which they went to Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers bombarded them for 5 touchdowns. But Denver gave up on Bradley Roby. They weren't interested in bringing him back, and he played well here until he got hurt. So Conley's an outside corner like Lonnie Johnson. Will play opposite him. Crawford, you mentioned him, the 6th-round pick. They might have to use him. But their plans, Conley is not stopgap. One that was mentioned, Chris Harris Jr. from Denver. Well, he's 30 years old, wants a new contract. Texans weren't going to bring a guy in here and have him for this season and then lose him. And they also would be paying a 30-year-old corner who plays slot receiver a lot of money. They already got Bradley Roby for that.
And how do you feel about the safety position? As well, see, I mentioned Justin Reed earlier on. I feel Jahlil Adai, for me, has done a really good job in that secondary as well. And I've quite liked, for the most part, what I've seen from Gibson, although he hasn't necessarily been as consistent as I'd personally hoped for. What do you feel from that safety group at this point in time as well, throwing A.J. Moore as well?
What I like about Deshaun Gibson is he was brought in to handle tight ends, and no tight end has abused him, including Travis Kelce, like they did last year when Rob Gronkowski and Zach Ertz embarrassed him. And now he's hurt. He's got 3 injuries. He was playing hurt, and he had to leave early in the first quarter of the Indy game and didn't come back. Jahlil Adai came in. He like Gibson, he's 29 years old. Gibson signed a multi-year contract. Adai didn't. But Adai played pretty well against the Colts. Justin Reed's a really good player, and everybody likes him a lot. I want to see him make some big plays. And this would be a good game to do it in against the Raiders. And they got young guys like A.J. Moore, and they got an old guy like Mike Adams at safety. They signed him last week. You know, he's 38 years old. He's going into his 16th season. And I don't know if they brought him in as a player or they brought him in to kind of be like a coach on the field, because that's what he is.
Do you think in these coming weeks then, do you think we could see some of Mike Adams at some point? Because, and obviously, as you mentioned, he's certainly the oldest guy in this locker room now. And it was a bit like the Logan Paulson situation, where the guy was coming in more as a sort of mentor than anything else.
They got 3 guys in front of him, Reed, Gibson, and Adai. And they don't have a lot of 4 safety formations. So I'm not exactly sure. It could be what you talk about, his influence on the other players and in outside the locker room, but he knew that coming in. He could see the roster, but whatever he was told or found out, he wanted to be here, and he's here. He was inactive for Sunday's game. Maybe he'll be active for this one. But right now, when everybody's healthy, they don't need him because they got Reed, Gibson, and Adai.
And speaking of experienced players here, so obviously Jonathan Joseph, he's out at this point in time. Looking forward to seeing him back again soon because he's still one of the best players in that secondary. I don't think there's any questioning that. Do you think this could be his last year, or do you still see him in the Texans locker room for another year or two?
I've been thinking that every year, Anthony, that it was his last year because you don't see many corners playing into their 30s like he does. You know, Terrence Newman made it to 38. As a corner, and then I think he moved to safety. And J. Joe, I'm pretty sure when he's done playing, will move to the front office because they do not want him to get away. It means too much to the organization, not just on the field, but off the field. You know, he is the seasoned vet, the cool head. I'll guarantee you, when Mike Adams got here with his 16 years of experience and 38 years old, he went straight to J. Joe to get the lay of the land. So I always think it's his last year. I'm going to think it's his last year this season.
Fair enough. And then obviously throw in, here's a question I had for you, and it's slightly left field, but obviously we've seen Kareem Jackson in Denver. He's done a good job there so far this season. Do you feel the Texans made the right decision in letting him go, or should they have tried to keep him this year?
They never made him a contract offer. He didn't like it. And so if they thought he could still play and do what they wanted, they would have at least made an effort. Now, they signed Gibson to take his place. They signed Gibson, I guess, also takes the place of Tyrann Mathieu. And Jackson, of course, could play corner too, but I don't think they thought he was a corner. So I can't say at this point they made a mistake. I'm not sure how he's playing. We'll see him later in the year when the Broncos come to Energy Stadium. But the Broncos are not very good right now. And I think it's not because of their defense, but their offense. And at best, they hope to get a third-round pick for Kareem Jackson and a three for Tyrann Mathieu and get conditional picks for some other players they lost too.
Certainly. And over these, obviously, as you mentioned earlier, the Texans have gotten rid of, parted with a lot of draft picks over the next coming years. And you can understand why, like you mentioned, bringing in the likes of Stills, Tunsil, Conley, it brings a stability and it brings a certainty to it, which draft picks don't necessarily have to them. So I quite like the moves myself. Are you at all concerned about the lack of draft picks over the coming years in terms of they might struggle to bring in some more youth? Does that concern you at all, or do you still stand by that they made the right decisions here?
Well, first of all, here's their line of thinking. They think that they're going to be picking in the 20s like they did last season. And so they need a left tackle first and foremost. Say they're picking 25th. And there's a left tackle that's great, but they're not going to get him. They're going to have to trade to go up to get him. With still no guarantee they'd be the team to get him. What are they going to have to give up? They're going to have to give up 5 picks. And then they get that guy, there's no guarantee, as tackles are playing in college football. Used to, when they played pro-style offenses in college, you took a left tackle in the top 10, that guy was going to start for 10 years. Now they play a different style, and so they had, a lot of them don't make it. So I thought, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. You got cap money, you got compensatory picks, and you're getting young players. So if they gave up 2 ones and a 2 for Kenny Stills and Laremy Tunsil, I'd do that deal again in a heartbeat because where would they be right now without them? With them, they're 4-3, half game out of first place. They need to win these extra 2 games. But when you're giving up draft picks for young players, I don't have a problem with that. If you're like San Francisco giving up a pick for Emmanuel Sanders, even though it was low, guys on the last year of their contract, that's when you're trying to win right now. Texans are trying to win right now, but they figure Laremy Tunsil's going to be here another 5 to 7 years. Same with Guardian Conley and some of the other guys they made moves to get.
Absolutely. And then one of the other units, obviously, that was affected this year by trade, Texans pass rush, obviously, with Jadeveon Clowney out. You mentioned Jacob Martin's come in. The Texans like what they've seen from him so far. He's been progressing quite nicely in that system. How do you feel about the Texans pass rush this year. I know for me, the standouts have to be Brennan Scarlett. He's really jumped up a notch this year for me. And obviously Whitney Merciless as well. It's great to see him back as some of it, something like his best as well.
Merciless replaced Clowney. Clowney has one sack when a guy ran out of bounds and he was closest to him. Now he returned, I think, a fumble or an interception for a touchdown. Whitney Merciless has blown him away at every step. And if Clowney was still here, Merciless wouldn't be playing in that weak side outside spot, which is his specialty. So I see people go, boy, they didn't replace Clowney. Yeah, they did. Clowney's not doing squat. I ran a column today about there. We all thought the run defense would suffer without Clowney. Run defense right now is better than it was this time last year with Clowney.
Well, you throw in DJ Reader as well. He's been exceptional in run defense.
Yeah. Reader's been tremendous, and he's trying to get a new contract. And so they have not missed Clowney at this point as far as the pass rush. He's got one sack. Merciless has 5.5. Merciless has made big plays, too. This time last year, Clowney's stats were close to what Merciless's are now. But I don't have a problem with that trade. They've used the 3 to get a cornerback. So they could have ended up, in essence, with Brennan Scarlett replacing Merciless, Merciless replacing Clowney. And they think Jacob Martin is going to be a good pass rusher. You know, he affected the Kansas City game when he hit Patrick Mahomes' arm, but they think he'll start to get some sacks over the second half of the season. So, you know, those things need time to play out. But right now, Texans have the same record as last year, and they're going to have the same record if they keep winning. Next time they lose a game, they'll have a worse record than last year when they were 9-3 with a 9-game winning streak.
And also, I mean, how could anyone not love Whitney Merciless? I mean, he's easily one of the most entertaining guys to speak to in that locker room. He's just a fantastic guy. So it's great to see him doing so well.
He's in the last year of his contract. It's amazing how they play in the last year of their contract. Texans are going to have a lot of guys whose contracts are up, or they're going to have to extend guys like Deshaun Watson. So that off season is going to be really, really interesting.
Absolutely. Reader as well, another guy that is going to be looking for a new deal. I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out because he is right up there with the best in that position in the league right now, I think.
If he doesn't get it to his first Pro Bowl, something's going to be wrong. The problem is with a nose tackle, they can't be judged on sacks, although he's already got a career high 3, I think, or 2.5. I can't remember what he's got, but he's played the run great, ties up 2 blockers, frees up everybody else. I asked yesterday Romeo Crennel, J.J. Watt, and Bill O'Brien how they've improved their run defense without Clowney, and all of them mentioned Reader.
And I think, if I remember correctly, PFF have him at this point in the season, have Reader rated, I think, 3rd highest at his position in the league. And that's spot on, let's be honest. He's right behind Aaron Donald at the moment in terms of their rating. And I think he's just been fantastic. It's great to see him performing so well. And who doesn't love that lunch pail crew celebration as well at the end?
Well, it's not fair to even think about judging Reader and Donald. They play 2 totally different systems, 2 totally different styles. Reader's on the nose. His job is to tie up 2 blockers and free up McKinney and Cunningham to be unimpeded to the ball. That's a position, the nose tackle, that you have to be the most unselfish player on the team and not care about any stat other than W.
And one more player I wanted to see what your thoughts have been on so far is Charles Omenihu. For me, I was excited coming into the season anyway. I thought he was a steal in the 5th round. I loved what I saw coming out of college from him. And I've loved everything I've seen from him so far this season. What have your thoughts been on him so far? And do you think perhaps, has his production been what you'd expected at this point? Or is he ahead or behind of where you thought he would be right now?
The coaches, when they drafted him, they thought he's going to have a lot to learn, and he does. But when you talk to him in training camp and preseason, they were reluctant about praising the rookie, but they did. They liked him a lot. And they started the season inactive for Carlos Watkins to play. It didn't take long for Watkins to be inactive and Momentum to play. And he said he's made some big plays. They like him a lot. He comes off the bench. He plays inside. He can play outside if he needs to. But he has been a pleasant surprise all around.
Absolutely. And then finally, you know, I like to close out these conversations by throwing off just a little bit where I can. Now, I know you've been keeping a very close eye out on the Astros so far. Obviously, it's not necessarily going to plan so far for the Houston Astros. But do you think that the Houston Astros can bounce back and win this year's World Series?
Can they? Yeah, sure they can. Three teams in history have lost the first two games at home and come back to win. And so they can. Do I think they will? No, I don't. When you lose the first two with your two best pitchers and your next options are Zach Greinke, who's been terrible in the playoffs, and a bullpenning, that doesn't bode well. The Nationals have deeper starting pitching. Their bullpen is pitching really well. They're getting clutch hitting, and the Astros have things happening that don't happen in regular season. Alex Bregman botching two plays at third base, generously not ruled errors. And all this lack of clutch hitting with guys in scoring position is ridiculous. The Nationals deserve to be up 2-0. I hope the Astros win all three games up there. I'd take one right now, just one, to be within 2-1. People start to get some confidence back. But right now, if they get swept, it won't surprise me.
Well, let's hope they add to that. Was it three so far teams that have achieved that 2-0 comeback? So let's hope they're up there with those at some point over the coming weeks. John, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much for joining us today. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
That is McLain, McClain, McLain _ NFL. Also, Texas Sports Nation, TXSN.com. HoustonChronicle.com/sports. I'm all over those every day. Anthony, always enjoyed doing this podcast with you. Thank you, and keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, sir. It's been an absolute pleasure. Take care. And coming up now, we have Drew Doughty to preview this weekend's game. Thanks again to John McLain there. And now I have my second guest of the day, Drew Doughty of the Houston Texans. Drew, thank you very much for joining us once again. How are you doing?
I'm great, man. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to speak to you. So first of all, I've got to ask you, how do you feel about John Gruden's comments that everybody should like Deshaun Watson? Surely you agree.
Well, yeah, he's 100% right. Although he did put the caveat out there that he's, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, now, I've been accused of just about liking everybody, but yeah, he's right. If you don't like Deshaun Watson, you don't like yourself. So there's something wrong with you if you're not a fan of number four.
Can I just say your impression there of John Gruden was absolutely spot on. I'm looking forward to you breaking that out a bit more this weekend.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Gruden's too. I mean, he's a great character, and I think he's good for the league. And it was fun. We go to the combine every year, and the year he went to his first combine as the Raiders coach the second time around, so it was, 2 years ago, I guess, in the winter, he owned the room. And he wasn't just talking to other football people. He was talking to the guys selling hot dogs at the concession stand, the guys kind of cleaning up, you know, sort of doing janitor like work. I mean, he was talking with them, too. So it's just fun to see him interact with folks. I think he's a good dude, and he's obviously a good coach.
Absolutely. He's a great character to have around, so looking forward to seeing some more of him this weekend. And obviously, heading into this weekend, Texans are back at NRG. I mean, what's it like going back to NRG after a couple road games?
Yeah, it feels kind of weird. You mentioned the two road trips. You went to Kansas City, you went to Indianapolis. So it has been quite some time. That Falcons win seems like an eternity ago. And I know the guys they're happy to be back, and this is a tough team that's coming in. I know the record says they're 3-3, but they can run the ball. They got a really good offense. They've got a veteran quarterback, so they could do some things, and it's going to be a good matchup.
And a QB that a lot of people around the building saw grow up to some extent, obviously with his brother there in Houston. So is it a bit bittersweet in some regards seeing him playing for another team coming into Houston?
No, it's cool. Everybody around here has a lot of respect for the Carr family, and you know, they did their research on Derek during the draft in 2014. They met with him and, you know, thought about taking him. They didn't ultimately, but yeah, it's going to be fun to see him. They've seen him a couple times now. They saw him his rookie year, and then he beat the Texans in Mexico City in 2016. And then, man, breaks his leg and just derails what could have been a pretty good Raiders team, you know, into the playoffs. So, yeah, they have a lot of respect for Derek Carr and know he can do some damage if you let him.
Certainly. But with the Texans back on home turf this weekend, do you think that gives them – do they get some sort of advantage? Do they sort of get a bit more of a bump in confidence when they're playing on home turf?
I think so, yeah. You always want to play at home. You always play better at home, so to speak. And after having kind of a rocky first two games against you know, Jacksonville and then Carolina – looked like they sort of righted the ship to a degree against Atlanta. So definitely want to be back home and feed off the crowd and play really well defensively and, you know, put up some points on offense and get back to what you were doing in the previous three games, you know, in the red zone.
Let's be honest. I don't think anyone will complain if we had a repeat of the Atlanta performance. I mean, that was just unbelievable. I think I remember saying at the time, every time I'm having a bad day, I'm going to go back and rewatch that.
Sign me up, dude. Yeah.
But yes, so looking ahead to this weekend, who has really stood out for you this week at training and who do you think we should be keeping a close eye out for this weekend?
Well, you know, I'd always keep an eye on Stills. Kenny Stills came back with a vengeance last week from the hamstring injury and did really, really well. And it's a good thing you have him. You see why the Texans made the trade or, you know, wanted him involved in the trade with Tunsil before the season, because you want to make sure this offense has weapons. What doomed the Texans last year at the very end of the season? Poor pass protection and a banged-up receiving core at the very end, because DeAndre Hopkins, for basically the last 3 weeks of the regular season and then in the postseason, you wondered right up until game time whether or not he was going to be active, because he was really, really hurt. And he gets hurt in the playoff game and just wasn't himself. And people talk about Pierre Desir being a Hopkins killer. Like, he's a great corner, but that talk needs to kind of be calmed down a little bit, because, I mean, Hopkins was playing on like one leg and with one arm. But, you know, there was no Will Fuller there at the end of the season last year, for the last half of the season. Kiki QT played in the playoff game, but you hadn't seen him since like mid-November. So now that you got these weapons, you want to make sure they're around. And Fuller, we don't know when he'll come back, but you got Stills and you got QT. And you've got really two great tight ends, I think, in Fells and in Akins, who have been adding some things to this offense, and I'm pretty excited. But I think Stills is somebody to watch, because you got to account for Hopkins, and you know they're going to account for Hopkins, but are you really going to trust a rookie corner, which looks like you're going to see on Stills this weekend? I don't know, maybe, but we shall find out.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, obviously, the importance of pass protection coming into this game, and the Texans, let's be honest, that offensive line has improved massively these last few weeks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there is a bit of an injury situation at right tackle at the moment involving Johnson and Howard that I spoke to John about earlier. What's the situation looking at in that position going into this week?
Yeah, we'll see. He's banged up, so we shall see. I think, you know, be prepared for Dan Skipper, be prepared for Roderick Johnson maybe, but Skipper got in and got some time last week. Texans think pretty highly of him. It's pass protection as a whole, though. It's a group effort, not just the offensive line. They're obviously critical to it, but you got to get the ball out quickly. You got to, you know, have some routes that are designed, you know, smart. You have to get some help from your tight ends and your backs and your receivers in blocking. So a lot of components go into that soup. But on the whole, over the last month, pass protection has been a lot better. And I think this offensive line, with three new faces that weren't here last year in Tunsil, in Sharping, and then in Howard, and then you sub in Johnson, and then now you know, sub in Skipper, you count those three faces. I mean, I think they're starting to gel, and they're looking a lot better to go along with Nick Martin and Zach Fulton, who they thought very, very highly of as well.
And then throw in someone like Chris Clark as well. Can you see him possibly
Absolutely,
playing this
yeah.
weekend as well? Obviously, he's a very experienced player. He's played in the system before. Do you think, obviously, you can't give anything away at this point in time, but it's purely speculation, but can you imagine him suiting up this weekend and perhaps getting some reps out there as well?
He'll be ready if that need arises. It's good to have a guy like that who does, like you say, have the experience and has been around the building and been in this system. It's good to have him back. He's a real positive guy in the locker room. And it's good to have somebody like that who's seen so much. So, you know, I don't know that he'll play, but it's good to have him. And you know he will be ready to play if he's called upon.
Certainly. And then staying on the topic of injuries, how are the Texans looking elsewhere? Obviously, you mentioned Will Fuller as well. How are they looking at corner as well? You've got a couple of injuries. And just in general going into this weekend, what's the injury report looking like?
Well, you kind of know that Roby's out. And you thought, at least on last Sunday, wow, looks like the Texans have lost Jonathan Joseph as well. But after the game, he said, I think I'll be on track to play next Sunday. And then on Wednesday, Thursday of this week, Joseph kind of reiterated that. He thinks he's on track, said he's on track. We'll see. I mean, we will see on game day. But knock on wood, you're cautiously optimistic that he's going to be out there. So you got him. You got Lonnie Johnson Jr., who I think as a rookie has played admirably and been put in pretty good position to succeed. You got to be kind of confident and optimistic about what the future holds for him. And then Conley he was a first-round pick for a reason. And I don't know that he was in a good situation, scheme fit out in Oakland as good as he could be in this one. So I'm pretty optimistic that, hey, short-term he's going to help you out, but long-term as well, because he's under contract for the next few years. He's very young. He's very talented, and I think the Texans really, really are excited with what they might have there in Gary and Conley.
And how much have you seen from Conley around the building these last few days? Obviously, this must have been an extremely hectic week for him, but have you seen him around yet? Have you heard on how he's been settling in so far?
Oh, yeah. We talked with him yesterday after practice, and you know, he said all the right things. I'm excited to be here. You know, he likes the fresh start and whatnot. And Bill O'Brien talked about how Conley was hanging out with J-Jo and with Lonnie Johnson and the rest of the DBs and kind of trying to absorb as much as he can after, you know, the work was done, quote unquote, the regular work. I mean, he was staying extra and doing all those things. So he's trying to catch up and you know, immerse himself in the playbook and learn everything. And, you know, I think the Texans are going to lean on him for sure.
Absolutely. And then sticking with that secondary, do you think there's any chance we might see some more of the rookie Xavier Crawford this week or perhaps some more of Mike Adams at some point? I know he was inactive last week, but he's got a lot of experience in the NFL and he could prove handy with the Texans' issues at safety in terms of injuries right now.
Yeah, it would make sense, wouldn't it? It would make sense to see those guys probably. You know, Conley technically and J.J. are technically listed as being questionable for their game status. We shall see. But, yeah, there's a good chance you could see Mike Adams settling in. I mean, he started so many games last year with the Panthers that it would make sense to see him, you know, get a little bit of action because Tashaun Gibson has been banged up as well. I mean, Justin Reed's been banged up as well. So we'll find out, you know, come 3:30 on Sunday. But, yeah, I think those are safe assumptions that you'll see Crawford and you'll see a little bit of Mike Adams.
Certainly. And speaking of Adams, I mean, he's one of a number of veterans that the Texans brought in this season. Obviously, we saw Paulson for a while. You got the likes of Darren Fells, Deshaun Gibson, mm-hmm. and a couple others. What's he like behind the scenes? I mean, how much do these guys help the younger guys settle in and really adjust to these sorts of jump ups in quality?
Well, Matt Adams he's fun to talk with because he identifies with Andre Johnson and he identifies with Jonathan Joseph, guys who've been in the league quite a long time. Now, Johnson's not in the league anymore, but Adams has a few years of experience on Joseph. And I think that's remarkable because JJ's been around forever, but you know, you can only benefit from having a guy like that and his wisdom in the locker room and the stuff he's seen. I mean, he's forgotten more football than a lot of these guys have learned. So it's good to have him around for sure.
Certainly. And then can you, obviously we've heard about Texans have been working out various players this week, a couple of cornerbacks. Do you think there's any chance the Texans will dip into free agency again over this week or two?
Oh, I think it's all but a certainty you're going to see roster movement. I mean, and that's no matter what's going on this time of year. I don't think any NFL team is really, you know, ever set at 53 or with their 53. There's always going to be new faces that kind of come in throughout the course of the season, depending on matchups, depending on what hits you injury-wise. So, yeah, I do think there's going to be definitely some changes made, you know, there at the back end of the roster. But I think you could say that about just about any October, November, December of any NFL season.
Certainly. And then heading into this weekend, which matchups are you particularly looking forward to seeing? Because there's quite a few to look out for.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated with what the receivers do against their secondary because they've traded away Conley and they've got really young guys there in the secondary who are talented, but I want to see how those young, talented guys handle the best receiver in the game in Hopkins, handle a guy who's a deep threat and leading the NFL in yards per catch in stills, handle a guy in Kiki QT who can do some damage underneath and really has, you know, has been kind of quiet just because of all the options that the Texans have on offense, but you could see him really erupting at any point here. So I want to see that. And then I like what this front seven, this defensive line has been doing. And they're going against another really, really stout offensive line in Oakland's. I mean, Anthony, they've only given up 8 sacks in 7 games.
Absolutely.
Over the last, you know, over the season. That's impressive. I mean, that's really impressive. And, you know, or 8 sacks in 6 games. So, I mean, either way, that's a great unit. And they can run the football. So I know the Texans' defense and their front seven sees that challenge and wants to rise up and do great things.
Absolutely. And one of the other players I wanted to bring up just before we finish off here, Alex Magoo. He spent time on the practice squad, mm-hmm. was moved over to obviously the active roster for a while. He's just been re-signed to the practice squad after being cut. What is it about him that the Texans like so much that they're willing to, they're working hard and they're paying up a lot to keep him around? What is it about him and what does he bring to this team that they clearly like so much?
Nice history. He was in Seattle last year, and who is his quarterback's coach there? Think about it. Carl Smith, who's the quarterback's coach for the Texans now. Carl Smith. So Carl Smith is obviously told him some things, and that correlates with what they thought of Magoo in the pre-draft process. That's somebody that I'm sure that this regime was very high on if they were to bring him back the way they have. But got to interview him once, and I like Magoo. He's got a cool personality, and for folks that haven't seen him play, he's somebody that can make stuff happen with his legs. Got a nice arm, and you know, he gets along pretty well with everybody in the locker room. So he's somebody that they see, you know, could have a bit of a future in this league, and it's not bad to have somebody like that around.
Certainly, I liked a lot of what I saw from him in the preseason when he was with the Jags. So that's someone I'm definitely glad they managed to bring back onto the practice squad. And then finally, as you know, I try and put my guests on the spot just a little bit with the last sort of closing question. So finally, can I press you for a prediction for this weekend's game?
Never. I don't do predictions. But, you know, I like this team. I'm very bullish on this team. And anytime Deshaun Watson is healthy and under center, I'm going to go with the Texans. I mean, I really think anything can happen with this guy. And, you know, I'll say that to you. I'll say that to people that I'm talking with at dinner. I mean, I really think the sky's the limit for him, for this team, and I think the future is very, very bright with him, and I can't wait to see what happens.
Absolutely. And as how about this? Then I asked this to John earlier. I've got to get your opinion on this. Can the Astros come back and win the World Series this year?
Sure, man. I'm a child of the 80s. The 85 Royals, they did this. They were down 2-0 and came back and won it. The next year, remember those Mets? Yeah, just about everybody does. It's one of the most famous teams of all time. They beat the Red Sox. It's the Buckner World Series. And then I think the 96 Yankees have done it, so certainly they could do it. They've got a guy in Greinke who pitched in the National League, is hitting the National League, so they can do it. You get Yordan Alvarez to start hitting with some guys on in front of him, some of these other bats to hit with runners in scoring position. Absolutely. I mean, this is, if any team can come back from 2-0, it's this team. Give me the Astros, for sure.
Absolutely.
I was at the game the other night to the bitter end. That Verlander game, he pitched well, and then the seventh inning came along, and the Astros just kind of fell apart, and it was tough. But yeah, I stuck it out, and I was there with my wife and her grandparents and my mother-in-law, my brother-in-law. We had a great time, and it was just good to be at a World Series game. It was the first time I'd ever been to a World Series game, so I was pumped.
Absolutely, and let's hope we've got some more coming up then. Let's hope they can pull it out right at the end there. That would be a fantastic
Amen,
comeback.
Brother. Amen. I'm all for that.
Drew, thank you so much for joining us once again. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
At Doherty Drew is my Twitter handle. And hey, before we close, I'm leaving for London on Monday night. I'm going ahead of the team. I can't wait. Me and a videographer, we're headed over there. I am pumped. First time to ever go to the United Kingdom, so I'm very excited. I studied in Madrid back when I was in college and got to go to, you know, all through Spain, and got to go to Paris and Nice and the Netherlands. So I am very, very excited to go to London. I'm pumped for this trip.
Well, you're a soccer fan, if I'm not mistaken, aren't you? Again, I remember you mentioned a while ago that you were you watched a lot of Madrid whilst you lived over there.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. A lot of Real Madrid, 98. Some Atletico as well, because Christian Vieri was with them.
Yeah.
He led La Primera in scoring that year, El Bobo. And, yeah, I'm a big soccer fan. And hopefully I can catch one while I'm there in London. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'm very pumped.
I was about to say, you must be excited to see Wembley Stadium then, obviously the home of English football.
For sure, yeah. So there's all that. And then on the plane ride home last week from Indianapolis, I watched the biopic about Queen, or Bohemian Rhapsody, about Freddie Mercury. So
yes,
Live Aid and Wembley was all there. So that was kind of cool. And I was like, I'll be there in about a week or two. So
absolutely,
yeah, I'm excited.
The only sort of remaining part from the original Wembley that you got to keep an eye out for is they got these big ramps that lead up to the stadium, the sort of known as Wembley Way. That's the last remaining part of the original Wembley that is still there from that era. So it's something I'm sure you'll spot at some point.
That's good to know. All right, I'm gonna check that out.
Enjoy London. Enjoy the weather. I'm extremely jealous because, let's be honest, I'd like to get out the heat. But
I hear you.
As always, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, and enjoy the trip to London.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans Wire of USA Today, and make sure to follow me on Twitter at ArWoodNFL. Thank you very much for listening.